Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to unpack complex topics, give you the essential insights and maybe some surprising facts so you can be truly well-informed. Today, we're diving into a really fascinating and, well, rapidly evolving world, cryptocurrency.
It certainly is. It's been quite a pivotal year for digital assets. And our sources were looking at reports from places like Flow Traders, Motley Fool, Fidelity, plus analyses on global adoption and regulation. They paint a really vivid picture. Unprecedented growth, significant shifts.
Yeah, it feels like things are moving faster than ever. So our mission today is to kind of cut through all that noise, you know?
Yeah.
Highlight how cryptocurrencies, which maybe started as a niche interest, are now becoming, well, deeply integrated into the global financial system, even into our daily lives. We'll look at the institutional embrace, the changing regulatory picture, and some surprising ways people are using crypto that go way beyond just investment.
Exactly. We'll explore the data behind these massive surges in adoption and market value. We'll examine the forces driving this evolution and, importantly, discuss what it all could mean for the future of finance. So as we start to unravel this, where do you think we should begin? What stands out?
Okay. Yeah, good question. When we talk about this huge institutional embrace, this institutional tsunami, as some call it, what's the first big piece? I keep hearing about exchange-traded products, ETPs. How exactly do those work? How do they bridge, you know, traditional finance and this new crypto world?
That's absolutely the place to start. So ETPs, they're essentially financial instruments. Think of them like trackers for underlying assets or maybe indices. And the key is they trade on regular stock exchanges, just like stocks you already know.
Okay.
So for you, the investor, it provides a familiar path. You can get exposure to digital assets without actually having to buy and store the crypto yourself, which can be complex.
Right. No wallets, no keys.
Exactly. You just use your existing brokerage account. That removes a pretty big hurdle for a lot of people. Now, within ETPs, there are a few different flavors. You've got ETFs, exchange-traded funds. They usually hold a basket of securities. And you get direct ownership, essentially. Then there are ETNs, exchange-traded notes, and ETCs, exchange-traded commodities. These are typically debt securities.
I see. So there's a difference there.
Yeah. With ETNs and ETCs, you're basically relying on the issuer to pay up. So you have what's called issuer risk. That's something to keep in mind. But the bottom line is these crypto ETPs let people participate in the digital asset market in a way that's regulated, accessible, and often pretty cost efficient. It really opens the door wide.
And it seems like those doors absolutely flew open in 2024. The growth sounds, well, explosive isn't even the word. What are the numbers telling us globally?
The numbers are, frankly, staggering. Global crypto ETP assets under management in the AUM, it surged to $134.5 billion by November 2024.
Wow.
And get this, that's a 950% increase compared to the previous year.
950%.
Yeah. And trading volume, same story. Hit $87.5 billion by November 24. That's an 817% jump year over year. So, you know, this isn't just a little ripple. It feels more like a tidal wave. It signals that traditional finance isn't just testing the waters anymore. They're building a serious bridge. And it's fundamentally changing what a diversified portfolio looks like for everyday investors.
Okay, so those are the global numbers, which are huge. But the elephant in the room, I guess, has to be the U.S. market, right?
Yeah.
What was the big game changer there that really shook things up?
That would definitely be the approval of the U.S. spot Bitcoin ETFs. That happened back in January 2024. Historic moment, really. And the impact was immediate and dramatic. Take BlackRock's iShares Bitcoin Trust ETF, ticker iBelly. It became the fastest ETF ever to reach $10 billion in assets under management.
Faster than any other ETF.
Ever. It hit that $10 billion mark in just 51 days.
51 days. How does that compare to something established like gold?
Great comparison. The main gold ETF, SPDR Gold Shares GLD, it took 818 days to reach that same $10 billion milestone.
Wow. Okay. That really puts it in perspective. So that one event in the U.S., how did it shift the global balance for these ETPs?
It completely flipped the script. Before January 2024, the EMEA region, Europe, Middle East, Africa was dominant. They held over 50% of the global ETP AUM between 2021 and 2023. After the U.S. approvals, EMEA's share just plummeted down to about 12.8% of global AUM.
And the U.S. took over.
Overwhelmingly, the U.S. now commands something like 95.2% of the global volume. It totally recalibrated the entire market.
So Bitcoin is clearly the main event here with these ETFs. But are other digital assets getting into the ETP game too?
Oh, absolutely. Bitcoin is still king, no doubt. It represents about 84.4% of the global ETP AUM. Ethereum is next, with around 10.5%. But the one that's really interesting to watch is Solana, SOL. It holds about 1.2% of the AUM.
Okay, 1.2% sounds small compared to Bitcoin.
It is, but here's the kicker. Its ETP AUM has surged 485% since its peak back in 2021. And now, if you exclude Bitcoin and Ethereum, Solana ETPs make up over 40% of all the other single-name crypto ETP assets.
40%, that's huge.
It is. And what's really remarkable is this growth happened without a spot Solana ETF even being approved in the US yet, shows real underlying demand.
And you mentioned comparing Bitcoin ETPs to gold ETFs earlier. What does that tell us about market penetration? Is it comparable?
It's actually pretty eye-opening. Bitcoin ETP's share of the total market cap of all mined Bitcoin, well, it's already triple the share that gold ETFs have of all the above-ground gold.
Triple. Already.
Yeah. Gold ETFs only account for about 1.2% of all the gold that exists. Bitcoin ETPs are way past that relative penetration level. It really suggests that crypto ETPs are moving into, well, uncharted territory in terms of how quickly they're being integrated into investment portfolios compared to traditional commodities like gold.
Okay, so the institutional money is pouring in through these ETPs.
Yeah.
But for this whole thing to really work and grow, you need rules, right? Regulations. How is the global regulatory scene keeping up, or maybe not keeping up, with this incredibly fast evolution?
That's definitely the crucial next piece of the puzzle. What we saw in 2024 was kind of a two-speed development globally. Some places really leaned in, embraced crypto ETPs and innovation. Others were more cautious, held back a bit.
A mixed bag then.
A bit of a mixed bag, yeah. But overall, the reception was positive enough to allow for these huge market shifts we just talked about.
Let's take the US then. You mentioned the watershed moment in January 24 with the SEC approving those 11-spot Bitcoin ETFs. Then Ethereum ETFs followed in the summer. That felt like a major shift.
Absolutely pivotal. It signaled a significant change in stance, at least for those specific products, within the traditional financial system. And looking forward, the recent U.S. presidential election outcome could really change things further.
How so?
Well, President Trump's re-election, combined with a Republican-controlled Congress, it suggests a potential move towards a more, let's say, crypto-friendly regulatory environment. Trump himself has even said he wants to make America the crypto capital of the planet.
Now, what that means in practice, we'll see. And there are signals beyond just talk, right? Like appointments.
Exactly. The appointment of David Sacks as the first crypto and AI czar is a big one. It seems to signal an intention to move away from what many called regulation by enforcement.
You mean suing companies to set precedents instead of writing clear rules up front?
Precisely. The hope or the signal is towards clearer guidelines. And another point President Trump has made very clear is his opposition to central bank digital currencies or CBDCs.
Why the opposition there?
Primarily concerns about financial privacy and government overreach, sovereignty. Instead, the focus seems to be shifting towards regulating dollar-backed stablecoins. There's the Genius Act, for instance, which aims to provide clear rules for those.
Okay, so that's the potential shift in the US. What about Europe? They seem to have been working on a big framework for a while now.
Yes, Europe has MiCAR the markets in crypto assets regulation. That's set to be fully applicable by the end of 2024.
What does MiCAR do?
It's a game changer for the EU because it provides a single, comprehensive, unified set of rules across all member states. That clarity is huge. It makes traditional financial institutions feel more comfortable engaging with digital assets because they know the rules of the game.
Right. Predictability is key for big institutions.
Definitely. And MiCAR also enhances investor protection.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, something really significant is happening with ESMA, the European Securities and Markets Authority. They're reviewing whether crypto assets can fit into the UCI's framework.
UCI. That's the big one for retail funds, right? Like mutual funds.
Exactly. It's kind of the gold standard for retail investment funds in Europe.
Yeah.
If they open UCI's up to crypto, even in a limited way, that could potentially unlock access for funds managing something like $13 trillion in assets.
$13 trillion. Wow. That would be massive for mainstream adoption.
Truly significant.
And are we seeing similar moves in other parts of the world? Asia, the Middle East?
Yeah.
We are. Hong Kong made a big splash in April 2024 by approving spot Bitcoin and Ether ETFs. That was a first in Asia. They're clearly positioning themselves as a virtual asset hub. And you also have places like Dubai and the UAE emerging as really significant players. They've been quite proactive with digital asset regulation, trying to attract talent and capital.
So it sounds like progress, but it also sounds fragmented. You mentioned this two-speed world. Does that create challenges for this idea of an internet of value, this seamless global transfer of assets?
It absolutely does. This two-speed approach, or even multi-speed, it creates what you could call global regulatory arbitrage.
I mean, companies will just go where the rules are easiest.
Or clearest or most favorable, yeah. That fragmentation, especially within the U.S. itself, you know, you have the SEC, the CFTC, state regulators, sometimes with conflicting views, it has definitely slowed down progress domestically. But crypto has kind of thrived anyway, despite those hurdles.
So innovation finds a way.
Innovation and capital tend to flow to the jurisdictions that offer the clearest and most welcoming frameworks. This can put pressure on other regions to harmonize or risk being left behind. That's why many argue that clear leadership from the U.S., if it materializes, is really vital for achieving some global alignment on crypto rules to avoid, you know, a completely fractured digital economy.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So we've talked a lot about Wall Street, institutions, regulators in Washington and Brussels. But what about Main Street? Let's shift gears a bit. How is crypto actually touching people's daily lives now? Is it still just an investment for most, or is it becoming more? How many people globally actually own crypto?
The ownership numbers are really quite impressive. Globally, we're looking at about 562 million people owning digital currencies in 2024.
562 million.
Yep. And that's a 33% jump just from 2023. It works out to about 6.8% of the entire world population.
Almost 7% globally. That's significant penetration. Is the growth happening everywhere?
It really is a global phenomenon. South America saw incredible growth, up 116.5% in ownership. Europe was up over 60%. North America, nearly 40%. It's expanding rapidly across continents.
Who are these owners typically? Is it still mostly young tech guys?
Well, the demographics still lean that way, admittedly. About 61% of owners are male, and the 25 to 34 age group is the largest segment. But that also highlights a key point. For crypto to achieve truly sustainable growth and mass adoption, the industry really needs to broaden its appeal beyond that core demographic. Attracting more women, older age groups, that's crucial.
Right. Now, thinking about usage beyond just holding it.
Yeah.
It's easy to forget Bitcoin's original idea, right? Peer-to-peer electronic cash. A payment system. Are we actually seeing crypto fulfill that original promise more now? Are people using it to buy things?
We definitely are seeing more of that. And there are some key advantages to using crypto for payments. Think about lower transaction fees. This is especially true for cross-border payments, where traditional methods can easily cost you 5 or 6%. Crypto can be much cheaper.
Okay, cost saving is a big one.
And then there's chargeback protection. For merchants, fraudulent chargebacks are a real headache. Crypto payments are typically final, which protects them, though they can still choose to issue refunds, of course.
And global reach.
Global reach, exactly. Plus financial inclusion. Around 31% of adults globally are underbanked, meaning they don't have full access to traditional banking. But many do have smartphones. Crypto can offer them financial services.
That's a powerful point. But what about the volatility? If I'm a merchant, do I want to accept something whose price swings wildly?
That's a valid concern, but payment gateways have largely solved it. They allow merchants to accept crypto, but instantly convert it to their local fiat currency, dollars, euros, whatever.
So the merchant gets the sale, but doesn't hold the crypto risk.
Precisely. They get the benefits without the volatility exposure. And we're seeing big names get on board. You mentioned Ferrari earlier. They accept crypto. Grab, the big ride-hailing and delivery company in Southeast Asia, does too. Plus lots of e-commerce sites, travel companies, even luxury brands.
So the infrastructure is building out.
Yeah.
What are consumers saying? Do they want to pay with crypto?
The surveys suggest they do. A 2023 survey found 65% of consumers would actually like to make payments in digital currencies. And even more striking, 80% said they were interested in using crypto for everyday things, like retail goods.
80%, that's high.
It is. And get this, 55% said they'd choose an online store that accepts crypto over one that doesn't, assuming everything else is equal. That's a real competitive advantage for merchants.
You know, something else jumped out at me from those consumer insights. Nearly 40% of people said they'd prefer to be paid in crypto for their work. What do you make of that?
That's a fascinating statistic, isn't it? It suggests a pretty profound shift in mindset. It tells us that a significant chunk of people don't just see crypto as a speculative investment anymore. They see it as a legitimate medium of exchange, maybe even a better store of value for their labor.
Potentially hedging against their local currency, maybe?
Could be. Or just wanting more financial autonomy, faster payments, lower fees, especially for international workers. It really speaks to a growing trust and preference for digital assets.
And we see this real-world utility playing out dramatically in some places, right? Like Bolivia. What's the story there?
Bolivia is a really stark example. They've seen a massive 630% increase in digital asset transactions over the past year, hitting around $430 million.
630%? Why such a huge jump?
They're facing a severe shortage of U.S. dollars, which they need for international trade. So crypto has become a crucial alternative. It's gotten to the point where even public institutions are using it. Their national energy company, for instance, has reportedly started paying for fuel imports using digital assets just to navigate these macroeconomic strains.
Wow. So it's become almost a lifeline for parts of the economy.
In some cases, yes. A tool to bypass constraints in the traditional system.
And another interesting development I've heard about is crypto cards. Like debit cards, but linked to crypto accounts. How are those impacting everyday spending, say, in Europe?
Yeah, this is a really interesting, almost under-the-radar trend. These digital asset payment cards are quietly reshaping how Europeans handle everyday expenses. Remarkably, nearly half of all transactions made with these cards are for small amounts, under 10.
Under 10 euros. That's like buying coffee, snacks, stuff usually paid for with cash, or regular contactless card.
Exactly. It's moving into that territory once dominated by cash. And stablecoins are the main driver here, making up about 73% of the spending on these cards.
So people are using stablecoins for stability in everyday payments. Makes sense.
Right. But it's not just stablecoins. People are also using Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana directly for purchases via these cards. Now, traditional finance isn't always happy about it. We've seen banks like Barclays, for instance, try to block customers from making crypto purchases.
Some pushback there.
Definitely some resistance. But despite that, these crypto cards are clearly emerging as a popular tool. They might soon be genuinely rivaling traditional banks right there at the checkout counter.
Okay, so we've got this picture. Massive institutional adoption via ETPs, a shifting regulatory landscape maybe becoming more favorable, and this growing real-world footprint from payments to even salaries.
Mm-hmm.
What are the fundamental forces driving all this? Let's start with the big picture, the macroeconomic factors.
Well, global economic uncertainty is a huge catalyst, particularly high inflation and currency devaluation in many parts of the world. Think about countries like Argentina, Turkey, Venezuela. When your national currency is rapidly losing value, people naturally look for alternatives to preserve their wealth.
And crypto becomes an option.
Exactly. Especially Bitcoin, with its narrative as digital gold.
Right, because it's decentralized, has a limited supply. It offers a potential hedge against that fiat currency depreciation. Argentina seems like the textbook case here.
It really is. The Argentine peso plummeted something like 74% year over year recently. That kind of collapse forces people to find alternatives. As a result, Argentina saw about $85.4 billion in crypto transactions in 2023. And now, reports suggest around 5 million Argentinians are actively using crypto, often daily, just for regular transactions.
5 million people daily. That's not niche anymore. That's becoming mainstream out of necessity.
Precisely. Economic hardship can be a powerful accelerator for adoption.
And speaking of Bitcoin's limited supply, we can't ignore the halving effect, can we? Remind us how that works and why it's significant.
Right, the Bitcoin halving. It's baked into Bitcoin's code. Approximately every 4 years, the reward that miners get for adding new blocks to the blockchain gets cut in half.
So fewer new Bitcoins are created over time.
Exactly. It systematically reduces the rate of new supply entering the market. This built-in predictable scarcity is absolutely crucial to that digital gold narrative. And historically, these halving events have often acted as catalysts for significant bullish price trends in the following months or years. It creates a supply shock.
Okay, so macro factors like inflation and built-in features like the halving. What about technology? Are advancements helping build trust and adoption?
Definitely. We're seeing some really innovative approaches to transparency, which is key for building trust, especially with these new financial products. Take proof of reserves or POR system.
Proof of reserves, what's that?
It's a way, often using cryptographic methods, for exchanges or ETP issuers to publicly prove they actually hold the assets they claim to hold, sufficient to back customer deposits or the ETT shares. Some systems allow for almost real-time verification. That level of transparency, it was basically impossible with traditional financial products.
You couldn't just look up a bank's real-time reserves easily.
Not like this. And you also have on-chain data platforms like Arcum Intelligence is one example that allow anyone to track the underlying collateral for some of these products right on the blockchain. Mm-hmm. It provides this incredible layer of accountability.
That's a major shift in transparency. And we're seeing innovation in the products themselves too, right? Like Grayscale's move.
Yeah, Grayscale launching their lower cost mini trusts alongside their flagship products. That shows the market is maturing. Issuers are developing different strategies, different fee structures to cater to various investor needs and compete more effectively.
So the tech is improving, the products are evolving. What about institutional adoption? Beyond just the ETP flows, are we seeing other signs?
We are. If you look at the Q2 2024 13F filings, those are the quarterly reports where large investment managers disclose their holdings. They showed that financial advisors significantly increased their institutional assets under management in Bitcoin ETFs. It went from about 27% in Q1 to 36% in Q2. So advisors are putting more client money into these products. We also saw major banks like Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs expanding their holdings in Bitcoin ETFs with positions well over $100 million each reported.
Even the big traditional banks are getting more involved.
Right. But maybe even more significant, symbolically at least, is the entry of state pension funds. The state of Michigan retirement system, for example, disclosed holdings in crypto ETPs. When a large, typically conservative pension fund starts allocating, that signals a major shift towards mainstream acceptance.
Yeah, pension funds moving in is definitely a big headline. Okay, so looking ahead then, what are the biggest opportunities you see for continued growth and innovation? And what are the hurdles, the challenges that still remain?
On the opportunity side, I think we'll definitely see continued product innovation. Maybe more thematic ETPs focusing on specific sectors within crypto, or ETPs based on other emerging cryptocurrencies. Perhaps even meme coins, though that's more speculative.
Interesting. What else?
We might see more integration of decentralized finance principles into these traditional products. Think about ETPs that generate yield somehow, maybe through staking or lending integrated within the fund structure. And another big one, the likely launch of options trading on these spot crypto ETFs. That opens up much more sophisticated trading and hedging strategies for institutions and advanced traders.
Okay, so lots of potential innovation. What about the challenges? What needs to happen for this to keep growing smoothly?
Well, a big one is still investor education. There's a significant knowledge gap between the world of traditional finance and the often complex world of crypto. Bridging that gap is critical. And related to that is overcoming skepticism. Concerns about security, about hacks, about market volatility, those are still very real for many potential investors. Building more trust and demonstrating robustness is key.
So it's about moving beyond the early adopters and crypto enthusiasts to attract that broader, maybe more conservative investor base.
Exactly. That's the path to true mass market acceptance. Education and building trust are paramount. So looking back, we've really seen a truly transformative year for crypto ETPs and honestly for the whole digital asset landscape. From those incredible surges in AUM and trading volumes, largely sparked by the U.S. spot ETF approvals, to the shifting sands of global regulation, it's just crystal clear that crypto isn't some fringe market anymore.
Absolutely. And what I find so fascinating is how you see these big institutional moves and regulatory shifts happening at the same time as the real world utility is expanding. You know, people in Argentina using crypto to fight inflation. People in Europe using crypto cards for coffee. The lines between traditional finance and digital finance, they're blurring really, really fast.
That really does raise the big question, doesn't it? If crypto keeps integrating into our existing financial systems like this, and global ownership continues to climb so rapidly, how much further can this convergence actually go? Will we eventually reach a point where digital assets were just another form of money, maybe even a preferred form for many for certain uses? It's a profound question about the future.
So what does all this mean for you listening right now? Well, it suggests that understanding this space, this crypto evolution, it's probably no longer just for the tech savvy or the specialist investor. It's increasingly becoming essential knowledge, really, for navigating the way the global economy is changing. There's that famous quote often attributed to Bill Gates. We always overestimate the change that will occur in the next 2 years and underestimate the change that will occur in the next 10. With crypto, maybe, just maybe, we're seeing that play out right now in real time. Thank you for joining us in this deep dive.